Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Canada is ahead of the U.S. in a number of ways, in a number of not good ways, very bad ways. One of those ways is assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide. How far ahead of us are they? Well, that remains to be seen. But if you want to die by a physician's hand in Canada, all you have to do is ask, and you don't really have to give any medical reason for that. You can be depressed or just feeling lonely. We're going to be talking about Canada's annual medical assistance in dying report. Wesley Smith joins us. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, an attorney and consultant for the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine. He's a columnist for National Review Online and author of the column titled Hundreds of Sick Canadians Euthanized Over Loneliness. Wesley, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Good to talk to you again.
How far ahead of the United States is Canada on the widespread use of euthanasia?
Well, hopefully they're so far down the road we will never get there. Canada has had lethal injection euthanasia forced upon the entire country by a Supreme Court ruling in that country and then embraced by the national parliament. And once that occurred, everyone in the establishment got on board with euthanasia. The medical establishment, doctors, you had nurse practitioners writing letters saying, let us and euthanize people too. You've had the Alzheimer's Association up there saying that if a person with dementia signs a directive to be killed once they're incompetent, that should be done, and so forth and so on. Here in the United States, there is still a major fight as to whether or not assisted suicide, not lethal injection, should spread beyond the 8 states in which it currently exists by statute and the District of Columbia. So here the battle is still on. In Canada, it has been such an abject surrender to the culture of death that when somebody wants to be euthanized, the organ donation organizations are contacted, and then at least in Ontario, the organ donation organization will contact the person to be killed and ask for their organs. That's how commonplace and acceptable it has become in Oregon. In Ontario, if a doctor does not wish to kill a legally qualified patient, that doctor could be put up on charges of professional misconduct because the province of Ontario and the courts have said that every doctor asked for euthanasia must provide it or must find a doctor who they know will provide it for the patient, because even though Canada has a right to freedom of religion and conscience in the charter, the right to be killed trumps that.
Tell us about the Medical Assistance in Dying report. What is it?
Well, in all these countries that legalize euthanasia or assisted suicide, they try to make people think, well, everything will be under control. We'll do investigations. We'll publish statistics and so forth. So every year there are these very dispassionate statistics published about what has supposedly occurred in the previous year. Now, in this country, for example, in Oregon, it depends totally on or substantially on doctor self-reporting. And then the documentation that is compiled by the state to publish these increasingly scarce or scant statistical analyses and descriptions are then destroyed. I don't know about the process in Canada, but every year they come out with a report, and they've just done so just this week.
What are some of the reasons that people give when they want to be euthanized that are honored completely without question in Canada?
Yeah, the one that really got to me in this one, which is why I put up the piece in National Review, is that 771 people, if I do my math, 13.7% of the 5,631 Canadians who died by homicide, and I use that term, I didn't say murder, homicide, they were killed by doctors or they were killed by nurse practitioners, that 13.7% of these people did it because of loneliness or isolation. That's a quote, isolation or loneliness. So in about 770 cases, one of the reasons or the reason people gave for being killed was because they were lonely or felt isolated. How in the world is that compassionate? If somebody says, I'm suicidal because I'm isolated, I'm so alone, isn't the proper response to help them not feel so isolated and alone? But apparently, oh, well, you've got a sickness, your death is foreseeable, that's all that matters to us, and they give the lethal injection. I've seen no evidence that there's any attempt in Canada, beyond perhaps an occasional one, to engage suicide prevention when people ask to be killed. And that, to me, is an abject abandonment.
What are some of the other reasons that can get you euthanized in Canada?
Well, to get euthanized in Canada, you really don't have to have a reason other than your death is reasonably foreseeable based on a medical determination and that there's irremediable suffering. But the concept of irremediable suffering is defined by the patient. So it's whatever the patient says it is, and that can include psychological suffering. So according to the statistics, 82% wanted to be killed because of the loss of ability or fear of the loss of ability to engage in enjoyable activities. Of course, that's a very serious concern when somebody has a serious illness, but interventions can help overcome that. 78% because of fear or because of the loss of ability to perform daily activities of living. Again, these are very serious concerns that people who are experts in chronic disease or end-of-life care can help alleviate. Fear of inadequate pain control or inadequate pain control is 53.9%. That's absolutely scandalous because any good pain control doctor will tell you that most pain in terminal illness can be substantially alleviated. So 53% either were not getting adequate pain control or feared they were not getting adequate pain control. That's a real scandal. And by the way, a previous study found that in Canada's single-payer healthcare system, only about 15% of Canadians have access to quality palliative care. That's people who are dying and people who are not dying. But the pain control is a real problem in Canada. The idea of loss of dignity, 53.3%. Again, a serious concern, but people can be help overcome it with proper mental health and spiritual interventions. Perceived burden on family, friends, and caregivers, 34%. So in 34% of the cases, and remember, we're talking over 5,000 cases, people put themselves out of their loved one's misery. That's really a frightening statistic.
It seems that this is part of a bigger problem, at least in Canada, Wesley, where all of these things, as you said, be it the pain, mental, emotional, or physical, do have palliative treatments, do have sources of help. But Canadians must be getting a message, and I'm curious how they might be getting that message, maybe the laws themselves, that it's better to die than to seek to alleviate that pain.
Yeah, in fact, that's the message of the entire euthanasia-assisted suicide movement. We're getting it here, too. And the idea is to normalize this as, quote, death with dignity, close quote, as if dying a natural death isn't dignified. When the law says something is legal, many people interpret that to say it's the same thing as saying it is right. And that's a very real problem. And in Canada, when you have the organ donation system involved, when you have doctors setting up practices for killing, when you have the government now seeking to expand the law to include people with dementia who ask to be killed, when you have the government of Canada even seriously talking about expanding the law to include pediatric euthanasia, which, by the way, occurs in the Netherlands and Belgium, It's a real problem. And here in the United States, all we have to do is look at the case of Brittany Maynard. Brittany Maynard was a young woman with brain cancer who moved from California to Oregon in order to commit assisted suicide back in 2014-2015. And CNN declared her one of the extraordinary people of the year, not because she fought the disease, not because she tried to raise attention to the kinds of palliative care that could help alleviate her situation, but precisely and only because she very publicly promoted assisted suicide and committed suicide. That's how this stuff gets pushed as a normal and proper practice. When you see Hollywood making movie after movie after movie in which euthanasia or assisted suicide is depicted as compassionate and proper, and which suicide prevention never even gets mentioned, that's how we move down the path of the culture of death.
You mentioned a connection to the harvesting of organs, kind of that industry that thrives on healthy organs from those who have died. Talk a little bit more about that connection in Canada.
Yeah, you know, the first piece I ever wrote against assisted suicide euthanasia was in 1993 in Newsweek magazine. And I wrote it in response to a friend of mine committing suicide under the influence of Hemlock Society literature. And I was so appalled. At that time, I was writing books with Ralph Nader. I was very happy working with Ralph. But I was so appalled at what happened to my friend, who was, by the way, not terminally ill, that I wrote a piece called The Whispers of Strangers. And people can get it online if they want to do an online search, Whispers of Strangers, Wesley J. Smith. It'll come up. And in that, this is my first anti-euthanasia piece and didn't realize it was going to be a commitment of the rest of my life at the time. But I worried as I thought through what would the consequences be of accepting this kind of very toxic mindset that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering. And at one point I said, if we're not careful, this will end up where organs will be harvested as a plumb to society, was how I put it. And now we're beginning to see that occur. In Belgium and the Netherlands, people who want to be euthanized are sometimes with mental illnesses. That's not happening in Canada yet, but it is happening in Belgium and the Netherlands. People with mental illnesses go to a hospital, are killed in a hospital, are wheeled into the surgical suite, and their organs are removed. Now, this is really a toxic, abandoning, cruel thing to do, because you're telling people who have a terrible time getting through the night in terms of their emotional difficulties, their mental illnesses, that their deaths have a greater value than their lives. And that is precisely the message that is sent when you can join euthanasia and assisted suicide. In one of the cases in Belgium, and these are being written up in respected organ transplant medical journals, which is also frightening because they're being written up without criticism. And to me, that would totally undermine our confidence in organ donation. But in one of those cases, I looked deeply into the article to find out what the mental illness was of the mentally ill person who was killed and harvested, and it was self-harming. So the, quote, treatment for self-harming was to be killed. It just made my head explode, the cruelty of that, the abandonment of that, the lack of real love for that person, and looking at that person as an organ farm rather than as a human being in desperate need of help, succor, love, and embracing of inclusion.
You mentioned earlier the infringement upon medical conscience, medical judgment in Canada. Go into a little more detail, Wesley.
Right, and that's beginning to be proposed for the United States, too, in terms of not of euthanasia, but in Catholic hospitals are being sued, for example, for refusing to do transgender hysterectomies, because the bioethics community is at war with freedom of religion in terms of the practice of medicine. So in Canada, a court of appeals in Ontario has said that any patient who approaches any doctor to perform any legal healthcare intervention that is paid for by the government, that doctor either must do it or provide what's called an effective referral, meaning find the doctor they know will be willing to do it. That doesn't only include euthanasia, it includes abortion and includes some of these transgender interventions. You've had some of the most important bioethicists in the United States. People like Ezekiel Emanuel was a prime architect of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is currently Joe Biden's one of his chief health care advisors. I believe could become a Secretary of Health and Human Services if Joe Biden wins the election. He wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine that any doctor asked to do any procedure that the medical establishment believes is not controversial must either do it or refer, and he included abortion in that because he said abortion is not controversial in the medical community. That would eventually also include assisted suicide, in his view, if even though he's an assisted suicide opponent, if the medical community widely accepted euthanasia or assisted suicide under Ezekiel Emanuel's formula, doctors would have to do it. As I said, hospitals are being sued for refusing transgender interventions, even though it's not aimed at transgender. A Catholic hospital, under Catholic moral teaching, cannot remove a healthy organ for any reason. So if a woman, say, didn't want to be pregnant and wanted a hysterectomy to do that, which would also sterilize her, a Catholic hospital would say no to that, just as these two Catholic hospitals, and perhaps there are more that I'm aware of, have said no to a transgender hysterectomy. You've had Catholic hospitals sued for refusing abortion, for refusing sterilization. So this idea of medical conscience is going to be one of the great and most important religious freedom debates in the coming decade. And I'm not being partisan here, but it's just a fact. Many of the Democrat proposals in health care, certainly the Medicare for All proposals, have said that refusing an abortion should be considered discrimination. In other words, that would destroy medical conscience around that very contentious issue.
Two quick final questions for you, Wesley. You point out that Canada has about one-ninth the population of the United States. If their numbers were superimposed on our numbers, what would these deaths look like?
Well, realize that Canada's had euthanasia legal for only a couple of years, and it goes up every year. This year, it's over 5,000. If the same number of people were killed by doctors in the United States, it would be more than 50,000. It would be as many as the number of soldiers killed in Vietnam every year. And with next year, there'll probably be more killed than were killed this year. If you go to the kind of statistics that the Netherlands has in terms of the number of people killed versus, you know, in terms of per capita, the amount here, I believe, would exceed 100,000. So this is not something that's just a few people who are at the very end of life with nothing else to alleviate suffering. That's a false sales pitch. You are talking about, if it becomes widespread in the United States, tens of thousands of people killed every year by doctors or given lethal prescriptions to kill themselves. That has a real moral cost, in my view, for any nation.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, given the isolation caused by COVID-19, are you concerned about an increase in euthanasia worldwide?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, one of the problems, I don't know if we spoke on it on your show, but they are now beginning to do assisted suicide in the United States by Skype and by Zoom. In other words, the doctor never even, who prescribes the lethal prescription, the poison, never even meets or physically examines the patient.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, an attorney and consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine, columnist for National Review Online, and author of the column titled Hundreds of Sick Canadians Euthanized Over Loneliness. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Wesley, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
We will be going through your email and the Issues Etc. listener comment line when we come back. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the comment line, 618-223-8382.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. Jesus has come and brings pleasure eternal. The 11th century. The 8th century. Holy Spirit, create. the 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
I'm Pastor Watson. Are you tired of entertainment and in need of the peace that passes human understanding? I invite you to Augsburg Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Kansas, to receive the gifts of Jesus. Augsburg is scriptural, traditional, historical, sacramental, and reverent. The Church of the Apostles, the Councils, and the Reformers wants to be your church family also. For more information, visit us at augsburglutheranchurch.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.